The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Danny Cannell. That's Tom Fornelli. I'm Chip Patterson. We've got some questions from the big old bag of mail that we are going to jump into. Reminder, if you ever want to submit a question for a future mailbag episode, you can do it by leaving us 5 stars. Leave a review. Say nice things. Offer a legitimate, criticism. Just make it 5 stars. Put in your question. We will tackle it in a future mailbag episode. Before we get to that, it is truly talking season, and it almost like took me back to realizing and remembering that we didn't get the appearances at the Touchdown Club and like the local, like checking in with all the different boosters and going up and giving the little pep talk that you've got. And sometimes, depending on who the coach is, depending on what the comment is, it ends up getting picked up. Reporters might be there on scene, might turn it into a little bit of a story, which could then become a headline. Texas A&M coach Jimbo Fisher, according to reporters who were following him, were like, he was hitting multiple spots in like 6 and 7 hour windows. I mean, it was all full go. Texas A&M, 9-1 season, finished one spot outside the playoff. I mean, he is doing his thing, trying to charge up all of those Texas A&M boosters, all of the 12th men and women. So one of the quotes during his little pep talk included his confidence that he would be able to take down Alabama and Nick Saban. And so, as he's doing this, this is the message that is 100% being delivered to an audience that wants to hear it. Probably got all the claps, right up with him getting the boots on the day he was introduced. I am a boot guy, like really being excited about the culture. So when he says, don't worry, we're going to beat Alabama and Nick Saban, do you think that Jimbo Fisher, as Texas A&M's head coach, will have a win against Alabama, coached by Nick Saban, when both coaches are retired?
Hold on a sec. You gave the G-rated version. If you're driving around with your kids, mute it for a second. This is what he said. We're going to beat his ass when he's there. Don't you worry. That's what I could, real fast. I could hear it. That's what he said. I love it. I love it. I wish we had more coaches who said this, not only at their own Touchdown Clubs, but at SEC media days. And he's saying it with a laugh. This is smack talk at its best. And I guarantee you, if Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban are out playing golf together, or they're out on the lake together, wherever these coaches with all these millions of dollars hang out in the offseason, I guarantee you Jimbo Fisher would tell Nick Saban, I'm going to get your ass one of these days. It's smack talk at its best. And I think it's awesome. I love it. So now we can answer the question. I just wanted to get that out of my, I wish
more coaches said this. I like that. I mean, and listen, I hope that if they're having this game of golf, it's back in West Virginia, right? I mean, because it's Clarksburg for Jimbo, Fairmont for Nick Saban. Always had that sort of old West Virginia connection. I mean, they're probably dropping peanuts in the Coca-Cola. Oh, peanuts and Coca-Cola is a West Virginia delicacy. They probably are just doing it all, living up the smack talk. But do you think he'll have one? He'll have one win. He'll get his ass.
Yeah. Yes. They'll get him once.
That was a question mark No period. Period.
I mean, it's a compliment to what Nick Saban has built at Alabama, but I do think that Texas A&M is, you know, Jimbo Fisher's done enough there where I think the same question of him beating Alabama is kind of the same question of whether Texas A&M can take that next step. If the offense kind of opens it up and they get the right quarterback in there and they're able to, because like you can't beat Alabama 20-17 anymore. You've got to score at least 42 points. And if Texas A&M gets to the point where it's going to be able to put up 40 points on a regular basis week in and week out, then yeah, it's going to be able to get Alabama once. But I also agree with you, Danny, that we need coaches doing this more. Like, what's like the worst thing that happens is, okay, you lose and then somebody on Twitter, you know, like dunks on you. Who cares?
Right. Exactly. Who cares? I think he'll get him. I think he'll get him this year. And that's not a knock against Alabama. It's football. I mean, Alabama was trailing to Georgia at halftime, correct?
I can't remember if it was trailing, but it was definitely close.
They were down. You know, the Florida game never felt like it was in jeopardy. But, yeah, I mean, there have been teams that have beaten Nick Saban. Kevin Sumlin beat Nick Saban, right? I mean, it's been done before. So I actually like his mindset of setting this as the standard. Like, it's one thing if you're Mark Stoops at Kentucky or Eli Drinkwitz at Missouri, and they're come out there saying, yeah, we want to get Bama. Like, then it becomes the meme of we want Bama signs. They're all over the country. And it's like, oh, really? You want that? But he's in that echelon. Absolutely. He'll definitely beat them at some point. You know, how long Nick Saban coaches probably right, comes into play.
Gotta take, you know, these things into consideration.
But I think, I mean, if one of these quarterbacks, and I think from what we've seen, it doesn't appear to be, but maybe they're going against a great defense. You know, maybe that's why they've struggled in the spring. If one of them pops or in another year, they get a transfer. Maybe it's TJ Finley. I don't know. We'll get to that in a minute. But I mean, it does feel like they're really close. And I know the score isn't close, but their talent is getting a lot closer in the, you know, 4- and 5-star composite rankings. They're getting closer in talent.
Jimbo, Texas A&M, Alabama games seem to have taken a familiar like storyline where it's almost always, I mean, obviously every game's close to start with, but it isn't until like either late second quarter or mid third quarter, it's like Bama hits the gas and Texas A&M can't keep up. No, if we just take all of the beginnings of these games, you're like, man, like Texas A&M's going blow for blow with them. Like, I think the 2018 game in Tuscaloosa was one where it wasn't until, you know, a little bit about like late second quarter, maybe early third quarter, Bama was really able to run away and hide. But for the most part, when they get off the bus, they look every bit the part. And at the beginnings of these games, when they're just trading those first initial punches, they look every bit the part. They just need to be able to hang in there for four quarters, and then they'll be able to do it. You mentioned, great segue, Danny, LSU had the quarterback battle has narrowed. Miles Brennan and Max Johnson seem to be the front runners, and so we've got some transfer news coming out of Baton Rouge as TJ Finley, aka shout out to Emory Hunt, Big Ponchatoula. Big old body, big old arm, Ponchatoula, Louisiana. He will be entering the transfer portal. We saw him it was a very difficult situation. And as we continue to learn more about sort of the way that things went at LSU in 2020, you know, it almost gives me a little bit of a second thought at any of my takeaways from the LSU season and from the individual players that were on the team. Comes in. After Miles Brennan gets hurt, plays a little bit, ultimately ends up losing the starting job to Max Johnson by the end of the season. Do you see him as a value add quarterback at the Power 5 level?
Yeah, I think for the right program. I mean, right. It really depends on where he ends up, because like he wasn't like a highly rated recruit out of high school. I think he was a high 3-star. But if you look at the list of schools who had offered him, clearly there are a lot of, you know, like Alabama offered him, Auburn offered him, Georgia offered him. There were a lot of big name schools that were interested in him. So I do think that he could still bring something. I think the concern is that just his style of quarterbacking isn't really what's in vogue right now, because he reminds me a lot of a very young Ben Roethlisberger, both in stature and just what he's able to do with his arm. But while he can move, he's not what you would call a mobile quarterback. So I don't know. I think it has to be the right fit. And I don't, obviously it wasn't working for him at LSU, but I don't think that doesn't mean that there's somewhere, not a Power Five school he can end up at where he's not going to be a better fit for what they want to do on their offense, where he can't play well, because he does have a good arm and he does show some excellent touch on certain throws. And I think that there's a very high ceiling on him if you're able to develop him properly.
I say, heck yeah, he's an Al-Uvad to the right program. I mean, he was a true freshman last year and he came in and against, we'll be selective here because we're selling TJ Finley, against two SEC defenses, he completed roughly 70% of his passes, four touchdowns and one interception, for almost 500 yards, over 500 yards. Now, granted, it was Arkansas at South Carolina, but as a true freshman to do that, and then he struggled. He came back to reality against Alabama and Texas A&M, who were two of the better defenses in the country. Auburn was a bad game. So he had a typical, very freshman-like year. But you saw flashes. You know, you saw somebody who's got a cannon. But I totally agree with Tom that he needs the right fit for him. And then I think it becomes interesting. All right, well, what are those fits? Like, if you're TJ Finley and you're surveying the landscape, or you're a coach and you're looking at like how many suitors are out there, and there definitely are some. Like, I think he reminds me, I think he'd be a Kyle Trask. You know, I mean, if I was TJ Finley, I would be investigating Florida, saying, all right, you know, what's out there? I think Texas would be interesting with Sark. I mean, Mac Jones wasn't the most mobile quarterback. He didn't have to run that much, but he was pure pocket. I think Mississippi State, you know, Mike Leach has won from the pocket before. So I think, and I mean, the school that I thought of instantly and has just had this wasteland of transfer quarterbacks that have been big and slow, except for Shea Patterson, was Michigan.
Yeah,
but it's kind of hard because if you're TJ Finley, do you want to go to Michigan with the lack of development you've seen at quarterback? So I think there's definitely going to be some suitors, and I think he'll be right there. And I think it was smart of him to make this move now. I mean, it was a crowded quarterback room.
I think that Texas call is an interesting call too, because who was Alabama's OC when they were recruiting TJ Finley?
Good point.
Sark, yep.
Little bit of positive news coming from the Clemson Tigers program, coming out on earlier this week, as Justin Foster will be returning to the program. Now, he had announced his intention to step away from football on February 24th following complications related to both asthma and COVID-19. But after he got his COVID-19 vaccination. He has been undergoing treatment at Duke University, and the doctors were very positive about him being able to come back and compete at a college level within the next month or two. That in 2019, he was an honorable mention all ACC selection. In 3 years, he's got 39 career games, 13 starts, 66 career tackles, 7 sacks, 17 and a half tackles for loss. And so, like, all of a sudden, now there's going to be 7 players on this roster for Clemson in 2021 that have started on the defensive line. 7 players that all have starts. 5 guys that have started at DN and 2 that have started at D tackle. Dabo Swinney called him a great leader with great experience and a really talented football player. And so, you know, as he's going to continue to work back, this is something that's exciting for Foster, because he thought his playing career was absolutely done. But because of some health improvements that have happened over the last several weeks, he now adds an experienced and gifted piece to three best defenses in the entire country as we're looking into it. So, yeah, I don't know if he's going to start, you know, and I hope that he's able to make a full recovery to have the kind of season that he wants. He graduated this December, so he's just got 1 year of eligibility left. Excited for him on the as a person, and I'm curious, man. Like, what were some of the takeaways other than, because it's almost like, because of the uniqueness of the situation and what we have seen at Clemson and in college football over the last year or so, it's cool to be able to root for Foster to be able to get back to his playing career.
Yeah, I mean, I think you nailed pretty much all of it on the head. It's just exciting that things have changed for him, that he's able to return. Whether or not he's going to be able to start, I don't know. I don't think it matters. I think it's good news for Clemson that you're adding to the depth, and I think it's great news for him that a kid who thought he was never going to be able to play football again because of the side effects and the long-term effects he was having after having COVID is now recovering and now thinks that he's going to be able to play and he's going to be able to get on the field. And I think that that's just huge, because that's not how you want anybody's, you know, football career to end. So for him to be able to go out and, you know, end it on the field and then possibly maybe move on to the NFL, that's just absolutely amazing news, and I'm thrilled for him.
Same thing. I mean, you said it perfectly. Great. And it's a player we'll be rooting for. Cause we saw players opt out. Some players opted out for NFL reasons. Some others opted out for COVID reasons. And this was one that was probably flying underneath the radar and probably got lost and didn't get much of attention because you had bigger names like a Ja'Marr Chase. Oh, he opted out. Then he becomes a top five pick. So you kind of get forgotten about. I'm sure he felt some of that, and he was retiring thinking, man, I may never play football again. And for him to be able to do that, and it sounds like he's got a great perspective on life. Even when he said he was totally okay, you know, he was at peace with not playing, got his degree. It sounds like he's got his priorities straight. And for Clemson, add some depth along an already pretty good defensive line. So hopefully he'll have a great year and we can watch him play, and it'll be awesome.
If they really are running like seven deep with players who could go start pretty much anywhere else in the ACC, then they're going to do that Clemson thing where they cycle bodies in. I mean, just the snap counts at the end of the season for Clemson's defense is always ridiculous when they are at their best, when they are healthy, and when they have the luxury of being able to do it. It makes it so that when Dexter Lawrence gets a little like nagging injury, they just shut him down for three games because they can afford to, because they trust the players that are behind them to be able to come in and be able to maintain that same level of competitiveness. And it certainly seems like Justin Foster is going to be another one of those trustworthy pieces, so that at the end of the season, when we're talking about game 13, game 14, game 15, the ones where championships are decided, Clemson, the coaching staff that has become as good as anybody else in the entire country at managing this stuff, this is just another advantage for them, for sure.
Little known fact, the reason Brent Venables has a get back coach is because he gets so excited watching his own defensive lineman rotate in that he wants to rotate in himself.
That's true. A lot of people don't talk about that. Hey, Cover 3 listeners, Chip here, and I wanted to let you know about what's on CBS Sports HQ this week. As always, CBS Sports HQ is your home to start your sports news day with live updates kicking off each morning at 8 a.m. Eastern. I was watching Avery Johnson on there weighing in on the NBA playoff push. Great stuff from Avery. And HQ is always your home ahead of the evening's action with live picks from the best analysts and cappers in the sports world each day at 6 p.m. Eastern time. You might be thinking that it's a quiet time in the sports with the NFL draft over, but you would be wrong. It's a Champions League week on HQ. In fact, the second leg of the semis just happened. We've got an all-England Champions League final, Manchester City and Chelsea, all the analysis that you could want for. It's on CBS Sports HQ. That's wall-to-wall coverage, latest news, analysis, picks, and lots of picks all around all of the action that we are looking at on CBS Sports HQ. So check out HQ on your computer at cbsports.com or via the CBS Sports app on your mobile phone or TV. It's always free and it's always on. It's CBS Sports HQ. Coming up on the other side, we open up the big old bag of mail with still a little bit of an NFL draft flair and more next.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does. 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This first question comes from Duke. Can you guys name some players that were projected as high draft picks, then came back to college and fell in the draft? Matt Barkley comes to mind.
I mean, Matt Barkley is a very good example of one. No, it's hard because like most of the top draft picks go, they don't really come back. But I think
Marvin Wilson, though, like we talked about it on the podcast,
this year there's a few, but that's like COVID kind of
like, was that a first round grade? Was the other one? I mean, the other interesting, he has not been drafted yet, but unless he like blows it out of the water this season, like if Brock Purdy had left after 2019, does he end up going higher than he does after playing the 2020 season? Jamie Newman obviously is another one where if he had just gone pro after 2019, does he end up getting picked a little bit higher instead of going absolutely undrafted? Those are definitely some of the ones that came. Oh, Teddy Bridgewater. Like, wasn't, actually, let me admit, I don't know if he was draft eligible.
Teddy was a first-round pick, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was 16th, 18th, somewhere in the teens in the first round.
But we were talking about him like a potential overall number one pick at the beginning of that college football season, though he might not have been draft eligible.
I think you could find a bunch of them. You'd have to dig a little bit. So I was just looking because, you know, we're doing the way too early mock draft for next season. And I feel bad. And then when I was looking at this might be a different conversation because some of these players could not have left anyway. They could have opted out, I guess. Some of them did. But from a year ago, way too early mock draft, some names I saw that were on both, you know, several different mock drafts. Jamie Newman was one. Although I don't know. I think he needed one more year at Georgia. I think it hurt him by opting out and not playing. But I do wonder how he would have done in a draft lead-up process. Tyler Shelvin, Marvin Wilson were two defensive tackles that both popped up on that list. Chuba Hubbard, although he could not have left, right? He could have opted out and maybe been a higher pick than he was. I think there are a bunch of guys that decide to go back that go lower than anticipated because the off season now there's.
Well, it's like, I mean, what was anticipated, right?
Right.
Then that ended up being
the problem is that some of these guys buy into the anticipated mock drafts as opposed to listening to the official grades from the, who puts those out? The NFL? Is there like a committee that does those for them
Yeah, it's something related to the NFL. They've got like a process that they let the prospects go through.
Right. Because I think if you're a first round projected from the official crew that we're talking about here, what Tom was just addressing, I think you're probably crazy to go back. But you can load up on insurance. You can do all those things. And they do have loss of value insurance now where if you get drafted lower. But I still think you're – I think you have to make a business decision, which is unfortunate, but –
Yeah, and I think it's going to happen at running back a lot too, but I think that's, I feel like the question is asked in the vein of like, it was a mistake to go back because you ruined your draft stock. Whereas I think that with a lot of running backs, it's become a situation where running backs just aren't as valuable. So it's like your personal draft stock didn't crater as much as the NFL teams and how they view you cratered.
And that would be right. Chuba Hubbard.
Yeah.
Like,
Chuba Hubbard's a good player, but he fell to the late fourth round.
Right. And maybe thought he could have gone second round, but doesn't always play out that way. All right. Thank you, Duke. This next question. Great work as always. The interesting conversations, knowledge, and chemistry. The whole crew makes the show stand out. Look forward to all the interesting topics the rest of the offseason as we seem destined for a normal 2021 season. Question. Lane Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian have had two very interesting careers dating back to their time together at USC. They forever seem intertwined because of their time together during the USC run of the mid-2000s. In the last 15 years, who has had the bigger impact, but also what can we learn from their careers? It's sweet to fail up.
I mean, you have to say Lane's had the bigger impact, right? Just based on, like, Sark was at Washington, and then he went to USC, and obviously he went to Alabama, and now he's at Texas. I feel like Sark's impact is still to come. I think that Lane, I mean, look.
Just what he's left behind in his wake.
That's what I'm saying. Where Lane leaves, like, there's been an impact. Like, when a meteor hits the moon, it might not be there anymore, but you can see the impact that it had on the surface of the moon. I think Lane Kiffin has a similar situation where at Tennessee, you know what impact he left. At USC, you know the impact he left. You know, and now he's taking it over at Ole Miss. So I think Lane has more of an impact as far as being a college football character. I think that you can argue he's had more success as a head coach than Sark has to this point. So I'm going to go Lane, but I think that as far as trying to handicap who has the most impact in the future, I think that it's not a knock on Lane, but he's at Ole Miss. I think Sark at a school like Texas, that gives him a much broader avenue to have a huge impact.
I think it's pretty easy at this point that I think it's Lane. Like for Sark, if you went with the, well, you know, he won a national championship at Bama. I mean, if he wasn't there,
they probably still
right.
I'll say that Sark built on what Lane did, because I do think the offense,
but who started that transition?
Lane.
Right.
Lane's offenses. And by the way, they each won one national championship as a Bama OC. Yep. So Lane was the OC. But then remember, Nick told him to go ahead and pack it up, go to Boca before the title game. And then Sark got promoted to interim OC and ended up not getting the job after that. So he's interim OC for the 2016 loss to Clemson, while Lane was the OC for the 2015 win against Clemson. Sark goes, does 2 years with the Atlanta Falcons, comes back for the 2019 season. Obviously, they don't win the SEC. 2020, they win the national championship. So both Lane and Sark on the Alabama Nick Saban national title scoreboard, one apiece. But I do think that the success that Lane Kiffin has had as a head coach multiple times over, that does probably give him a little edge on the scoreboard. But in terms of the impact specifically at Alabama, I think Sark did a really good job of continuing that process of opening things up and really leading Alabama into a more up-tempo, a more option-friendly type offense.
Totally. But who started it? I think he was the originator, was Lane Kiffin. And it was interesting because I was thinking, you know, Lane left Tennessee in such a wake. It was like this, you know, and there was this ripple effect, but Sark left USC, you know, with the way his exit was. I mean, I guess it's interesting. It's a great question.
So Sark has more potential, because if he does it at Texas,
he's in a better spot.
Yeah.
But like, what if Lane pulls off the unthinkable and shocks the world? And even if they go 8-4, but they beat Alabama or they beat, you know, somebody that's a surprise, maybe we don't, because I don't know. I guess it would be like, what is the bigger, clearly if Lane does more at Ole Miss, that's a way bigger deal. But then what's doing more Sark at Ole Miss? Like,
I think if Sark wins a Big 12 title at Texas, he wins this debate.
Oh, but what if Lane won an SEC championship at Ole Miss? It's way harder to do at Ole Miss than it is at Texas. But I think we all are in agreement that the more likely scenario because of talent is Sark at Texas. So yeah, I would agree that Sark probably from here, although I wouldn't count Lane out to keep ruffling some feathers and still make some waves.
I mean, once Lane replaces Saban at Alabama, then it's game on.
Exactly.
Please.
This might be a debate we'll be having for years to come.
Please. Oh man. No way. But maybe. I don't know. All right, let's Mary Flipmas. Here's Lane Kiffin going to Alabama. All right, here we go. This one is from Frank. Awesome show, gents. Now that the draft is over, what players do you think were hurt and helped the most by the COVID-shortened season?
It's hard to really know. We mentioned Chuba Hubbard. I think he was hurt by just a strange 2020 season. I think
Devontae Smith. I sort of look at this as like, I don't know, in May and June, or maybe in June of May, we were having phone calls like, okay, so if there's no college football season, what's the Cover 3 podcast going to do? You know, we were having phone calls with our editors like, all right, what other sports could you cover just in case there's no college football? Like, there was I even took it all the way back to, okay, a season was played. What was the benefit from it? Who ended up, maybe being a little bit hurt by it? I think that obviously opting out did not matter for Ja'Marr Chase. It did not matter for Penei Sewell. It did not seem to matter for Micah Parsons, but I do think that not playing might have taken away an opportunity for, and I don't want to like knock his decision because there was a lot that went into it, but if Kenneth Gainwell had been the leader, the rushing leader in the American Athletic Conference, then we might have been looking at him just a little bit differently. If, you know, Jamie Newman had played at Georgia, you know, then we might have been talking about him very differently. The players that were hurt, I think, were mostly hurt in the Big Ten and the Pac-12 because of the delayed and rushed season, because it led to less preparation. It led to very rocky performance. And because of the way those protocols were set up with no bye weeks, you know, you'd be out there and you might be playing with a position group that has two new faces that you hadn't even prepared for. And maybe you didn't even know that that was going to be your group. So in general, as a blanket thing, I think that the players that were hurt the most in terms of the NFL draft were the ones who were in the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and were being judged for their pro potential under very, very difficult circumstances in terms of preparation and execution.
And to go along with that kind of thinking, the Big Ten, two of the players who opted out for them last year were taken in the top 13, because you mentioned Micah Parsons, but Rashawn Slater opted out in 2020 season two, and he was taken at number 13 by the Chargers. I think a player that was really helped, Mac Jones.
Yeah. Yes. There we go. Like, if there's no college football, Mac Jones ain't going number 15.
Number 15. Yeah. He's not a Patriot right now. And, you know, you had people like Chip Patterson trying to give the man's job away at this time last spring. So I think he was helped. A player who might have been helped too was the guy taken after Mac Jones, Zaven Collins.
Yep.
100%.
Not only did he play the season, it's just he also had he was a good player going into 2020, and I think he's a draft pick. I don't know if he's a first-round draft pick without the season that he did have, particularly with just the plays he was able to make at seemingly every single time Tulsa needed a play made. So, yeah, there were a lot of players that were helped. There were some that were hurt.
I think Jamie Newman was the biggest mistake of all of them, deciding not to play. And who knows? I mean, he might have played bad at Georgia, and it might have worked out the same, but I think he would have been able to – I think he made a mistake. Zach Wilson,
helped.
Look at his season. I mean, he would have not been mentioned this past year. I don't even know if he would have been drafted. Justin Fields, I said this on the pod before. I didn't want to say it, but I think he got hurt by playing. I think he might have gone 3 or 2 if he had not played this season. And all we had was that really close to perfect season. I thought Gregory Rousseau from Miami hurt his draft stock. I was looking at some of these again way too early from a year ago, and he was top 5 by a lot of people. And if he would have had another year like he had in 2019, I think he would have been maybe a top 10 pick. And Jalen Phillips might not have been so I think Jalen Phillips had helped tremendously at Miami in the absence of Gregory Rousseau. And I think it hurt Rousseau. I would have had Zaven Collins on my list of players that I think it really helped by getting this season. Mac Jones is a great call. What about Kyle Pitts? I thought Kyle Pitts was, I did not see his name a lot, and I thought he had an outstanding season. He probably still would have been a first rounder, but I don't know if he would. I mean, he was the highest 10 tight end ever taken, right?
Well, I had him in the top 10 in my mock last spring before. Yeah. So yeah. I think Kyle Pitts was fine. Another name. Let's see. Interesting, going back to the Big Ten. because this was like a player that was half in, half out. Considering what his stock was after last season, where was Rondale Moore drafted if he had just opted out of 2020 entirely like he originally planned to and then kind of came back? And then it was kind of like, there was like, well, why isn't he playing? Oh, he got hurt. Because it's like there might be less, fewer questions about his durability had he not come back to play.
If he had just decided he was going to go pro after his freshman season. I mean, just like, hey, I'm just going to spend a couple years training and then get drafted. And if he had just gotten... just gone off that freshman season, then 100%. On the Zaven Collins note, I was thinking about this, having to write a little blurb for him. I didn't say this because I didn't want to be demeaning. I want to be able to give some context, and sometimes it doesn't always work. Writing's interesting for a writer. It's not my best form of communication. Watching him at times was like watching high school football, where there was just one player who was better than everyone else. Right? Where you just like see the one guy's like, okay, they really need a sack. That guy's going to go get the sack. They really need a fumble. That guy's going to go punch it out and recover it. Oh, they need an interception. Oh, they need a pick six in overtime for walk-off touchdown to win the game. Yeah, Zaven Collins is going to be the one to go do that. Just like the absolute freak. And I remember it oftentimes, it was somebody who wasn't even going to like play college football necessarily. It was like the basketball player who just happened to be one of the best athletes in the school, who's just going out there making things happen. Watching Zaven Collins in some of those AAC games kind of took me back to that in terms of his separation from just everybody else that's on the field.
You want to know another quarterback who's helped greatly, who went from likely undrafted free agent to fourth round draft pick?
What's that?
Ian Book.
Yeah. Oh, great season for Ian Book. Great season.
I don't think if you take Ian Book after 2019, I don't think Ian Book's being drafted.
Mm. Well, speaking of
Kyle Trask, too, is another one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Helped tremendously. I never would have guessed he would have been a second round pick. The other one, Sean Wade, was on a bunch of mock drafts a year ago, first round pick.
Should have opted out. Yeah.
Should've opted out.
Yeah, yep. And I'm trying to think like how much of that do I put on the like start, stop, canceled, not canceled, you know, you're coming right back, and he had to move positions a little bit. Like that was a lot got put on his plate, and he didn't have a lot of time to be able to break it all down. Ohio State was dealing with, I mean, there was one point, I think it was the Michigan State game, Ohio State had 23 players out. Now they won and they won handily, so it kind of got like looked past it, but I just think about assignments and about your position groups and about, you know, trying to handle all of that. It was a real challenge for Sean Wade last year, and I think it hurt him in the NFL draft. Also, getting cooked in the playoff hurt him in the NFL draft.
Here's another player that got helped out by 2020 season. Second to last player picked in the draft, wide receiver, BYU, Dax Milne.
Yeah.
All that Zach Wilson tape got
exactly. Got him drafted.
All BYU got helped by a schedule that included no Pac-12 or Mountain West opponents.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Though they did get San Diego State at the very end before you hop in and get mad at me for that one. All right. This next question comes from Ryan. Thanks for doing my question last week, guys. I'm actually a Clemson alum, so that was right on the money. Building off my question from last week, if you were building a college football team Moneyball style, what positions and or players would you focus heavily on? With top teams continuing to rack up the best commits, what would a mid-tier Power 5 or top-tier Group of 5 need to do to fight with the big dogs and pull off a Cinderella story? I think this possibly could become more likely with the new transfer rules in place, and it will be interesting to see what positions get valued the most in the new system. I mean, quarterback's the easy answer, right?
Yeah, this is kind of already happening, though. Like, because it would be really hard if you mean a Moneyball kind of system in the same sense of like what the Oakland Athletics did in the book Moneyball, where they looked for a specific statistical trait like on base percentage and saw that correlated well to performance and for offense. I don't think you could do that recruiting wise because the difference in levels of high school football are just so different, and the stats and the offenses and the way teams play, you can't really find like a correlation between a specific stat. So what we've seen programs do is traits like size, length, speed, all that kind of stuff, where they're maybe you're not like a five-star prospect because you're not a perfect prospect, but they do look for specific things that fit in their system and fit in their style that they know that they can mold and develop. I mean, that's part of what Matt Rhule was doing at Baylor before he left for the Carolina Panthers. It's part of what a lot of coaches have begun doing with their recruiting departments for their schools. So I don't think there's one specific area to look for. I think it depends on where you are, what you have to recruit around you, you'd have to look. So it's kind of, it's hard to pin it down to one specific thing. Personally, me, depends on the position. If I'm looking for a defensive back, obviously I care about speed because you got to be able to cover, and a part of that is speed, but length is a huge thing for me in a cornerback. I don't care if you're 6'2", if you've got long arms, like that helps make up for it. So it's stuff like that.
I was thinking about, so is this along the lines of the triple option conversation? Like if there's an edge, an analytical edge, and you want to do something different, or do you go for it on fourth down every time? Or do you go for two every time? Like I think it's hard. And I know analytics are creeping more into the sport of football in general, but I think Tom nailed it. It's really hard to find edges in the high school ranks coming out. I would probably, if I was at a school, I'd want a quarterback who was incredibly athletic, you know, try to find a quarterback who could run around and make plays. If you're playing against better competition where your offensive line can't handle their rush, I'd want a quarterback who could neutralize that somewhat. You know, maybe you do a lot of RPO game, like a Gus Malzahn style system with a lot of shiftiness and trickery. And like, that's where my mind goes when you start saying, how do we as a mid-tier group of five team catch up? That's where I think you've got to get creative and outside the box. I don't know if there's value necessarily, and the risk you run if you find, like, if you do a really great job scouting and you find some two stars, I don't even know if there are two stars, but you know, you find some guys under recruited and you find these diamonds in the rough, guess what's going to happen?
They're transferring out.
Ball out. Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'd almost rather go with the mindset of us against the world, all in on the team. Let's come up with this philosophy that helps us beat the odds, because if you get the talent, it's probably leaving, unfortunately.
So my mad scientist approach, cross train everyone. Okay. I'm recruiting offensive linemen and you're all playing defensive line. I'm recruiting defensive linemen and you're all flipping to the offensive side. All you wide receivers that are like two stars, I'm going to turn you into elite defensive backs, and defensive backs, you're coming on over to the offensive side of the ball. I want everybody to be cross-trained on not just up and down the line, but on both sides of the ball. All we're doing is we're getting athletes. I believe so much in my teaching ability that I'm only looking for body style and athletic traits, and then we'll just figure out, shake it up and pour it out on the table, move the pieces around and figure it out. I will say, and I was listening to, on a more serious note, I think that as fast as the ball is coming out of the quarterback's hands right now, I think the days of having a smaller defensive line with like stunts and twists, that's just time wasted. You're just not going to be able to get to the quarterback. And so I want a big nose tackle. I just want a space eater. And there are not that many human beings that have the like size, space, physicality to be able to go and play like a true nose tackle or even like interior defensive tackle and accomplish some of those goals. But I was listening to a coach talk about the advantage of having he got somebody from the transfer portal who can play that role. And he said a year ago, we were a little bit smaller, so we had to do a lot of twists, you know, had to mix things up and get creative. Not only does it take longer to get to the quarterback, but it messes with the vision of your linebackers and safeties. And so if you can just play a little bit more downhill from the defensive position, thanks to having that big interior presence, again, like going back to the idea that the ball's coming out quicker than ever. So sometimes some of these slow developing exotic pass rushes, they're not going to be as successful. So as tough as it is to get like an actual money ball searching the transfer portal, I'm looking for a 325-pound guy who can just take up a lot of space and be able to play that anchor role for me.
See, I'm going the opposite direction.
You want to go skinny?
Not so much skinny. Like, he could beat 325 pounds, but what's more important to me than eating space is, can you penetrate? Because like, that way I don't have to stunt. If I've got defensive tackles who can get in there and get into the backfield on their own, I don't need to stunt. Like, then I've got defensive ends who can do it. I've got four guys up front who can beat their man. That's what I want.
Fair. Guys, we got something coming up really exciting for you next week. It is a pew, 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 pew crossover episode. That's right. Pick six, cover three, getting together, clashing in the Battle Dome, talking about everyone's favorite topic this time of year, the NFL draft. Ryan Wilson, Will Brinson, Tom Fornelli, Chip Patterson. We are going to be discussing both what we saw from this past NFL draft and turning the page to look to 2022. That is coming up next week. It'll be dropping in your feeds on Monday. So be sure to check out the exclusive Cover 3 Pick 6 crossover episode. It's coming up. Subscribe to it wherever you find this podcast. All right, one last question from Jake. Hey, y'all, longtime listener, love the pod. Keep it going. I appreciate the love for Bronco at UVA. Two questions. First one was Super League talk in Europe. What would a CFP Super League look like? Kind of talked about that just a little bit. Number two, I'm currently a Baylor student. What is the realistic ceiling for Baylor as a program? Could they ever get back to the level during the Art Briles era? We have a Heisman and two relatively recent Big 12 championships, but I'm worried we may be stuck being mediocre because our recruiting hasn't been able to reach the next level. The people here want to win badly and will spend the money, but I don't know if the talent we can get will be enough. Thanks so much. Y'all are a great listen.
I think your ceiling is dependent on the rest of the conference and what's happening. Like, I don't think it's a coincidence that Baylor's best years, obviously they, part of it was Art Briles and bringing in a new system that wasn't as prevalent as it is today, where now everybody's kind of running that same kind of stretch it out to the hash marks, to the sidelines and stretch out the defense. But it was also correlating at the same time where Texas was going through probably a very rough patch. And there was kind of a vacuum at the top that both Baylor and TCU kind of crept into. And then Oklahoma wasn't really firing on all the cylinders that it is now, which kind of is what led to Bob Stoops stepping aside and letting Lincoln Riley taking it over. So now that Oklahoma's firing on all cylinders, if Steve Sarkisian gets Texas to what Texas can be, I think Baylor's ceiling is probably third best team in the conference. If things get rolling, it can be Iowa State. It could be Oklahoma State. I don't know if it's realistic to think that Baylor has the kind of attraction to talent and recruits that it can be Oklahoma and Texas based on all their history.
I think Iowa State's probably a good template for them to look at. TCU is a good, I think
Iowa State was kind of where they were going under Matt Rhule.
Right. I agree. I wonder, there have been some coaches that have hinted to me that while Art Briles was there, and this was before the scandal, that they took on a lot of players that were risky, right? Character issues, academic flaws, whatever it was, red flags. I wonder if now they've tightened it up and that hurts them. It hurts their talent pool. You know, and that's a good thing, I think. You know, we can all agree, like, hey, it's better that they've cleaned things up.
And don't have alleged sexual assault.
Exactly. That we can all agree is a suspects. Good thing. But they had a lot of good players that were, you know, that had issues. And I don't know if they can recruit against Oklahoma and Texas. And it is a talent acquisition business. I say that all the time. I get sick of saying it. But that's where I think, like, they can be, it's kind of Oklahoma, Texas, and then they could be right up there in that next tier. And like Tom said, if Texas, if Oklahoma miss on a quarterback, you know, somebody leaves, if Lincoln Riley headed off the NFL and they were in a transition, you know, something happens, then if they're primed at the right time, they can jump on it. But I think 9 and 10 wins, you know, every few years is a reasonable expectation for Baylor. And I think they could be back there fairly soon.
I think you can, you're a reasonable expectation or a reasonable goal from a fan perspective is to cycle up every 3 to 4 years. Because one of the things that was unique about the Matt Rhule team that made it to the Big 12 title game is it was loaded with juniors and seniors, and loaded with juniors and seniors who had played a lot and played a lot together. You know, they were the, like, 1 win, 7 wins, 10 win. You know, they had really been able to all come up together. And so it'll take maybe not a good recruiting class in the context of, like, a bunch of 4 stars or, you know, a couple 5 stars, but a good recruiting class in terms of just a good fit and a good group that can all develop together. And to your point about Art Briles and the system, Art Briles' system was so successful that Bob Stoops hired Lincoln Riley. 2014, you know, the year that, like, Baylor and TCU are co-champions, Oklahoma went 5-4 in the Big 12 and finished 4th place in the standings. It was the lowest finish in the Big 12 of Bob Stoops' career, and he went and hired Lincoln Riley, and the rest is history. He's like, wait, what is this? We need to do this. The belldozer ain't working anymore. We got to do something.
What was the questioner's name?
Jake, I believe.
Jake. If you're at Baylor, that means you're a youngin', means you're a whippersnapper. You probably don't really remember what Baylor was before Art Briles got there.
So it was pretty bad.
Like, if I think if we're talking about, like, a 7-6, 8-5 kind of program that cycles up to 9-10 wins, you're in a lot better shape than you were 20 years ago.
100%. That's Tom Fornelli. You can follow him on Twitter at Tom Fornelli. You can follow him at Danny Cannell. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Remember, Monday, Pick 6, Cover 3, Crossover. Get it wherever you get your podcast. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ever set foot outside of the hotel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount+. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.